Welcome to today's podcast. This is another installment in our continued series of strategic planning topics for business owners. My name is Steve Young, and I lead a team out of Indianapolis for UBS, where we focus on the unique and specialized needs of owners of closely held businesses. Today, in keeping with that theme, I've invited two guests to join me, Nick Francia from our Capital ESOP team. Nick is the Senior Vice President there, and Tim Jamison, Director at Prairie Capital Advisors. And be joining me today for discussion on employee stock ownership plans and how that can be used as an effective tool for transitioning ownership in the process of planning for retirement for people running companies. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, Steve.
Yeah, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Very good. As I said, today's topic, ESOP planning and how that works and how that could fit into the plans for a business owner as they're considering transitioning their ownership as part of their retirement plan. But before we jump into that, I thought it would be nice to introduce the two of you to our listeners and have you guys tell us a little bit more about your background and how we fit in as we work together. So, Nick, let's start with you.
Thank you, Steve. This is Nick Francia. Myself and my partner, Keith Apton, run the Capital ESOP Group for UBS nationally. And we run a practice comprised of 10 different professionals, and our entire business is focused on working with entrepreneurs and business owners, helping them identify different ways to potentially transition a business. And with that comes pros and cons of all different types of exit strategies. And so we really try to narrow things down. And Steve, obviously, with the help of your team, understand the tax implications of all the different types of exits, understand what it means to the company, to the employees, to the owner and their families, and then ultimately help advise them to make the right decision on the best path forward.
Very good. Tim, how about you?
Yeah, great. Thanks for the introduction. So this is Tim Jamison with Prairie Capital Advisors. Prairie is a full ownership transition advisory firm. So we advise business owners on all exit strategies, including mergers and acquisitions, either to a sale to a third party or private equity. But we also have a very large ESOP practice, both consulting for the company, helping them form and structure an ESOP, as well as working for the trustee and then doing the annual valuation update from there. Currently, we do over 300 annual ESOP valuations, and we work with UBS all the time, Nick and his team, in regards to helping business owners with liquidity after they get the ESOP funds and some other tax plays there. And obviously work with you, Steve, on local opportunities in the ESOP and M&A markets as well.
Very good. Thank you, guys. You know, we do a lot of conversations with owners of businesses talking about transition planning and wealth management, things of that sort. And I find that, generally people, when you start talking about ESOP, they fall in one of two camps. Either they're very familiar with what it is and how it works, or they're not. And for the sake of those listening to us today, Nick, would you mind just giving us a quick overview of what an ESOP actually is and how it works?
Absolutely. The first thing that I would ask everyone to do is forget the acronym ESOP, because it's confusing in that, to your point, Steve, half the people think it stands for employee stock ownership plan. The other half think it stands for employee stock option plan. So it's confusing and misleading from that perspective. What we're going to talk about today is an employee stock ownership plan. And in simplest form, an ESOP is a tax-exempt trust. And it's a way for a privately held business owner to sell a portion or all of their stock, and with the proper planning, permanently avoid the capital gains tax in connection with the sale. So with an ESOP being a tax-exempt trust, it truly is the buyer of the stock. It's what purchases the stock directly from the business owner. And I break it down into three different characteristics. I'd like to say that it's a flexible, tax-efficient exit strategy. And the flexibility of an ESOP comes from the fact that we're creating a buyer. And by creating a buyer, as an owner of the business, you can sell anywhere from 1 to 100% of the stock. So if you're looking for a minority stock sale, if you're looking to diversify your net worth and take some chips off the table, you could do a 30% or a 49% sale and still retain controlling ownership of the company. If you're at the end of your career and you're looking for a quicker transition and you want to lock in today's value, you could sell 100% of the company. So the flexibility is there to really create an exit strategy for all types of business owners and all demographics. The tax efficiency comes in two forms. There's tax efficiencies at the individual level and at the company level. At the individual level, as I said earlier, under Section 1042 of the Internal Revenue Code, you can defer or with the proper planning permanently avoid the capital gains tax in connection with the sale. So currently federal capital gains taxes are 20%. You then have state tax on top of that, and in some instances, the 3.8% Medicare surtax. All of that obviously can be avoided under Section 1042 if you sell stock to an ESOP. The second tax benefit is at the company level. So as most of us know on the call, an S corporation is a flow-through entity, meaning all the profits flow through to the shareholder, and the shareholder ultimately pays the tax. Well, in a 100% ESOP-owned company, where the ESOP owns 100% of the shares, if the company's taxed as an S corp, all the profits then flow through to the ESOP. ESOP's a tax-exempt trust, and therefore the ESOP operates federally and most state income tax-free. So from a cash flow perspective, you're almost doubling the free cash flow of the company by operating as a 100% ESOP-owned S corp. And then the last characteristic, as I said, it's an exit strategy. And I think this is extremely important because with ESOPs, there's a lot of benefits, but you have to also recognize what are the downsides. And this can be viewed as a downside or not, but being an exit strategy just means that you're not going to get 100% of your cash at the close if you do 100% transaction. It is a leveraged buyout, which means that you'll get the money over a period of time, whether it's 3, 5, 7, 10 years down the road. It takes time to get your money. So it is an exit strategy. It is a transition over time. And you have to believe in the solvency and the longevity of the company for it to be a successful transaction.
Well, that's a great synopsis of what an ESOP is, Nick. I appreciate that. And there's definitely some compelling reasons why an owner should be thinking about doing that. Tim, let me turn to you for a second. I know you've looked at a lot of transactions, and we've had a lot of opportunities to discuss different types of deals along the way. From your perspective and your opinion, what would make a good candidate for an ESOP transaction?
Yeah, that's a great question, because Nick gave a really good overview of what an ESOP is. But unfortunately, it's not a great fit for every company, which is why Prairie is kind of structured as a full ownership transition firm. And UBS does the same thing, kind of advises clients on various exit strategies. But the ideal ESOP, you know, I'm going to focus on a couple of things, size-wise and then some characteristics. So first of all, size. 20-plus employees is really ideal for an ESOP, because there are some share allocation rules and share concentration rules within an ESOP that if you get much below 20 employees, you're going to run afoul of certain DOL and ERISA regulations. So 20 employees. And because there are costs involved in doing the initial transaction, as well as the ongoing valuation work and ongoing maintenance of the ESOP, typically value of $2 to $3 million plus in the company. I mean, you can try to do something lower than that value, and we have done stuff lower than that value, but it's a little cost prohibitive in terms of companies a little bit smaller than that. So those are kind of some size requirements, but let's talk about characteristics. I mean, what really makes a good ESOP company? And you don't have to have necessarily all of the things I'm getting ready to mention, but a good hybrid or a good combination of these really lends to a good ESOP as we're talking to a prospect about various exit strategies. And if you only have maybe one of these, it might not be the best ideal fit for what you're looking to do. So the first thing is just a really good business model with good cash flows and a good history. We've done ESOPs where cash flows have been somewhat sporadic over time, but the ideal ESOP company has had good, stable operating cash flows over the past 3 to 5 years with a good operating model and a good prospect for the future. Because you do have a buyer who's basically buying the future cash flows, just like in any transaction. So a really strong business model with really strong, stable cash flows are very, very important. A strong management team is also extremely important, because in an ESOP transaction, the trustee who's actually buying the shares of the company is a passive investor and not running the day-to-day operations of the company. So we always like to tell prospects, the way you're running the company before the day the ESOP closes is the same way you're going to run the company the day after the ESOP closes. They want continuity. So part of any transaction, you're looking at management team to make sure they're strong. And also you have the second wave of management team getting ready to come up, or can come up in the course of 3, 5, 7 years, whatever the time frame is, to take over from the current management team. So good bench strength as well. Debt capacity is extremely important, because in an ESOP transaction, you're basically buying the shares back from the owner and you're putting non-productive debt on the balance sheet. So an example of a company that's worth $10 million, you're putting $10 million of unproductive debt on the balance sheet. Now, that's part of Prairie's job and UBS's job is to cash flow that out and model that out to show how it gets paid back over time and the company can continue to operate efficiently. But if you're already a very highly levered company, doing an ESOP transaction is probably not the best fit for your exit strategy. So a strong balance sheet with a lot of debt capacity is also very important. And lastly, kind of touching on what Nick talked about a little bit, is a business owner who's looking for a tax-favored exit, because there are some really unique tax advantages to doing ESOP, both to the company and potentially the selling shareholder. So that's another reason why we see a lot of ESOP activity. And then lastly, and probably what drives a ton of activity in the ESOP world, is the business owner looking to maintain the legacy he's created within that company and also maintain the culture that he's built. And again, we'll take a business owner down multiple paths. And a lot of business owners just don't want to sell to a third party because they don't want what they built over time to be changed by a third party who's going to come in and do their own thing. They want to really reward their employees. They want to maintain the culture they built and really enhance that culture and enhance that legacy. And an ESOP is the perfect play for that.
Those are great points. And I was taking notes as you were mentioning the different aspects of characteristics of a successful candidate for an ESOP transaction. You had mentioned debt capacity, and I think that's a good segue into my next question. I'll ask Nick. Obviously, when you're selling something, money has to flow. And in an ESOP, it's not as intuitive as you might think. You know, money in, money out. It's a little bit of an exercise on how you actually get the funding put together and the seller ends up getting his money. So can you take us really quickly through that process, Nick?
Absolutely. And I think that Tim can agree with this because I know that each of us have had a number of conversations over the years with clients that are exploring ESOPs. The greatest misconception within understanding ESOPs, in my opinion, is that the employees never actually take money out of their pocket to purchase the stock. And the way that an ESOP transaction is consummated is typically through a loan from a commercial lender. So let's just take a $10 million enterprise value company, for example. If a company is worth $10 million, it has the ability to take on debt. Whether it has the ability to take on $2 million, $3 million, $4 million, that's obviously a function of the assets on the balance sheet, the cash flows, customer concentration, where we are in the markets, et cetera. But let's just assume the company can take on $4 million of debt, so 40% of the enterprise value. So a commercial lender would lend $4 million of cash to the company. The company would take that $4 million of cash and lend it to the newly created ESOP trust. So now the ESOP is holding $4 million of cash, and the seller, the owner, is holding $10 million of equity, $10 million of stock. So the owner can then decide how much stock do they want to sell. If they want to sell 40% of the stock and do a minority stock sale, they can sell 40% of the stock to the ESOP in exchange for the $4 million of cash. That would mean that one day after the transaction, the ESOP would own 40% of the equity value of the company, or 40% of the stock, more specifically. The selling shareholder would have 60% of the equity, and the company would still owe the commercial lender $4 million. And through the profits of the business, they'd pay off the $4 million of commercial debt. If the seller wanted to do a 100% transaction, they could sell 100% of the equity value to the ESOP, so $10 million of stock to the ESOP. They would get $4 million of cash at the close, and then they would get a $6 million promissory note, so a $6 million IOU that would be paid to them over time. So again, Steve, going back to the initial comment of this being an exit strategy, you can see that in both transactions, this is not a quick exit. It's very contingent on the future cash flow and solvency of the company, but that's historically how the flow of funds would work in a hypothetical ESOP transaction.
I appreciate that, Nick. And as we said earlier, it's not necessarily an in and out for the owner. It's a process. And I think that's an important consideration to think about for a business owner thinking about going through this process, because that's where our team comes in from a wealth management standpoint and helping build out the scenarios and what this cash flow is going to look like for the owner over the life of the ESOP. We're about out of time, guys, and this is a topic we can certainly speak for hours on, and it's very Very interesting opportunity from a tax perspective, from a transition of ownership perspective, from a wealth planning perspective. But we're going to have to wrap it up here. But before we do, let me just ask either one of you if you had any last minute comments you wanted to add or maybe put a bow on the topic for our listeners. Nick?
Sure, Steve. Thank you. So I would encourage any owner that's listening to this podcast to really take a second to think about the advisors that you have around you. And the greatest advice I think that I can give is make sure that the advisors that you're working with work well together and are entirely agnostic as to the solution that you provide. And what I mean by that is if you look at Prairie, if you look at UBS, we're entirely agnostic as to how business owners transition businesses. We have an expertise in ESOPs, and so we can help through that transaction, but we can also help as Prairie can through a sale outright to private equity, to a strategic buyer, do a dividend recap, going public, doing an intergenerational transfer. There's a number of different ways to potentially transition a business. So working with advisors that work well together, that work in the client's best interest, and are agnostic to the outcome and just providing education so that the owner can make an educated decision is really what's going to provide the best outcome, in my opinion.
That's great advice. Thank you, Nick. Tim, do you have any last minute thoughts?
Yeah, I would just actually echo 100% what Nick just said. And I will say the same thing as he said about Prairie and UBS taking that approach. I mean, we're absolutely agnostic to what the business owner decides upon. We just want to give them the facts, walk through the scenarios, and help them make a decision and transact on that. So, you know, again, just echoing what Nick said, make sure you're surrounded by a good set of advisors who are really looking out for your best interest. And just, you know, a plug for ESOPs, because that's what we're talking about today. Obviously, the market has been very strong over the last several months. I mean, we're all seeing a lot of activity in the ESOP market. And, you know, it's a lot of fun to work with business owners who get a lot of joy out of selling the company to their employees. And highly encourage you to consider this as an option if you're looking for an ultimate exit one day.
Guys, thank you very much for your time. I want to thank everybody that tuned into the podcast today to listen to this information. And I would also encourage anybody that has questions about the topic of ESOP or transition planning, or whether or not it's the right time for you to sell your company or the right option for you to sell your company, to reach out to me. My number is 317-816-1830. My email address is stephen.young@ubs, and that's Stephen with a V. And if you have questions for either Tim or Nick, I'll make sure we get those to you and get a response for you as well. In the meantime, again, just a reminder, our team is set up to help you figure out what your goals are, your objectives, and do scenario planning so that you can kind of experience what that end result might look like before we go down that path, and to help you align your goals and objectives with the right opportunities so that we can increase the value of those outcomes when it's time for you to move on. And with that, I'd like to thank everybody again for tuning in and wish everybody a good day. Thank you.